Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Holy cow.
Just actually just stopped that. Yeah, I just stopped. That's awesome. That was our intro.
Dr. Brett Quinto.
We might need to truncate that.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Quinto. That's pretty intense. It's awesome.
One of my brother's colleagues.
A fellow doc who lifts. For us. A fellow endocrinologist who lifts. Dr. Quinto, thank you.
Very good. Today, we are going to be talking about NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And new guidelines are coming out. I believe my brother contributed something to it.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was one of the obesity experts on it, and we'll talk about why. And so we can't publish this podcast before it's published, but we are talking about it.
Why?
About the same time why as it's you? About to be. Why was I even involved?
Because you're the greatest endocrinologist to walk the planet.
Yeah. Well, so, we'll get into it a little bit more, but really, fatty liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver, and we can talk about some of the names, but it really is more of an endocrine disease. But it's historically been obviously treated and studied a lot by the liver specialists, the hepatologists, the gastroenterologists. And what really needs to be done is it really needs to be a little bit more front lines, not even just for endocrinologists who see a lot of it without really maybe even knowing it, but the front lines. So patients need to be aware of it. Primary care doctors need to be aware of it. Endocrinologists really, really need to be aware of it. And we'll talk about why that's we see a lot of it and maybe don't realize it more so than the hepatologists, because, you know, they really can deal with the downstream ramifications and the complications of it. But we need to prevent it and treat it earlier on as a whole healthcare team and patients. So we'll talk about why that is.
I would say, you know, it gets in the idea of this cardiometabolic specialist that we've been going over.
Exactly.
Cardiologists, primary care. So I'll tell the story real quick. When we were in residency in the hospital and seeing people in florid liver failure, we'd see a lot of people who sometimes you'd see hepatitis, viral hepatitis, but sometimes autoimmune. But that's what we were used to, alcoholic hepatitis or liver failure due to alcohol. And I'll never forget over 10 years ago being in training, and this woman came in, you know, she had class 3 obesity and clearly end stage obesity, because she was in liver failure in the ER, and we had to, you know, make sure we stabilized her and get her to the floor. And she never drank any alcohol. We did a whole workup, but, you know, my brother will probably talk about this, but you really need to make sure when you're doing non-alcoholic fatty liver, you got to do all this rule out for other causes. And she had no other causes other than simply her obesity and the cardiometabolic, the metabolic sequela from the obesity. It was like the first time I saw someone, wow, this person has liver failure simply from a complication of their obesity. It was quite interesting and sad at the same time. And she ended up doing okay. And I have another few patients just who see me as an obesity specialist to where it same thing happened. And now they're doing extremely well. It is something that you not always can reverse, but can do well with regardless, even if you're kind of in those later stages. So, can you give some definitions?
Let's just talk about what fatty liver is, mostly for patients. I mean, fatty liver is essentially the storage of triglycerides in the liver, where we don't really want to store that fat tissue. Non-alcoholic fatty liver, technically, by clinical definition, is liver fat or hepatic steatosis for clinicians listening, that's either seen on imaging, like an ultrasound, or histology, which is like biopsy, so that's tissue samples, technically in the absence, like you just noted, of known causes. So alcohol, viruses, these sorts of things, which is literally why it's been called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, despite some calls out there for some changes to the name, like metabolic fatty liver disease. I almost think we could call it, you know, in line with some of these other terms we talk about, adiposity-based chronic disease, you know, it could be called adiposity-based liver disease, because that's literally what it is. Now, a caveat, though, for clinicians and patients, there's no rule that says you can't have multiple causes of liver disease, right? So we can have obesity and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is by far the most common cause, by the way, of progressive liver disease in the United States. But, you know, a lot of people drink alcohol, and so you could have a little bit of both, and there's nothing to say you couldn't have some other cause of liver disease from viruses or medication. So we do have to keep that in mind. Bottom line is, this is becoming essentially the most common cause of real chronic liver disease worldwide, and it's relatively prevalent, especially in obesity. And you know, you and I were talking yesterday about I think Dr. Sam Klein was giving a talk on this whole metabolically healthy obesity. So listen to our other podcast on that to listen to that. And you know, one of the issues he brought up was how everyone's so different genetically and how we store our adipose tissue. So weight is complicated, right? We've talked about that. How much weight we store is complicated, but where we store it and what happens to our healthy fat cells and if they're going to play along anymore, where does that excess weight end up going? Well, one of the places it can go in some people is in our liver, in our muscle cells and our pancreas and these things that increase the risk of diabetes. So in this case, too much fat getting stored in the liver, and that can be a huge problem.
Yeah. And he mentioned, though, that a lot of this is just unfortunately genetic.
Yeah.
So you start gaining weight. Luckily, some people store it in their legs and their butt. Some people store it in their abdomen and liver and muscle and other places. That's no bueno, not good. It's not even based on necessarily the dietary quality.
Some of it can be. We'll talk about that. Yeah.
We are docs who lift. So we promote physical activity. That probably has a big component too, but a lot of it's just unfortunately genetic and you won't even know it. A lot of your blood markers may look okay, but you won't even know it unless you actually
We're going to talk about. So in these new guidelines, when they come out for endocrinologists and primary care doctors who may not be as well versed, because this is a pretty, in the grand scheme of medicine, this is a relatively new disease process that we're learning about and trying to figure out the best ways to do it. So one of the bottom lines up front is, so what? So what if we have fat in our liver? Well, from a very liver-centric, what do we care about the liver, is the risk of what we call actually NASH. So the whole disease process is called right now non-alcoholic fatty liver. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is fat, technically, fat in the liver, essentially, on like I said, imaging or whatever. But NASH, NASH, stands for non-alcoholic steato, which is the fat, hepatitis, which means inflammation of the liver. And so that's technically defined as the presence of at least 5% hepatic steatosis, so the fatty liver, but also inflammation and liver cell or hepatocyte injury, which you can see on histology, and the patients probably don't care about this, but ballooning and stuff like that. And that can be either with or without something called fibrosis. Fibrosis is when the liver isn't working well anymore. And somewhere around 20 to 30% of patients with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease can go on to develop NASH, which of course can then lead to liver failure or cirrhosis, and even hepatocellular carcinoma, cancer. And so that's kind of the liver-centric aspect to this, why we care, why we want to prevent this and treat it if we get to that point.
Well, it's also a huge risk for heart disease and as well. Like you said, liver-centric, then going on to other end-stage types of diseases.
And then, of course, in the bigger picture of obesity and adiposity-based disease, patients with fatty liver also have a lot of the increased risk for those things, you know, because it's really essentially a liver component of metabolic syndrome. And so increased cardiovascular risk and long-term death. So those are the bottom lines up front, why we care about this.
Yeah. Okay. So you go to your doctor and should you ask? Should you say, hey, you know, I got a lot of weight to lose. I'm struggling to lose it. Can you just get me a liver ultrasound? Like how do you know? You just, some people aren't going to have elevated liver enzymes. Some do. Should we be screening everybody?
Right. So that's where we get into some of these. It's kind of like a cardiovascular risk, statistical risk screening. Yes. An assessment from that. And so for fatty liver, what's going to be recommended is this thing called a FIB-4. And so there are certain groups that have significantly high risk, not just of fatty liver, because pretty much, you know, everyone who's struggling with obesity probably has risk of fatty liver itself. But those who have a high risk of going on to that NASH, the cirrhosis, the real bad risks, those are the ones we really want to catch and dig a little bit deeper. And so people who have type 2 diabetes, they have a really high risk. 60, maybe even 80% of people with type 2 diabetes probably have fatty liver, and then they have a higher risk of going on to the fibrosis and cirrhosis, et cetera. But also obesity complicated by multiple components of metabolic syndrome. High triglycerides, low HDL, high blood pressure, the pre-diabetes group. And then, of course, if you already know for some reason, so we don't need to start going and ultrasounding everyone's liver, but if there is an ultrasound of the liver for some reason, maybe even on a CT scan or something like that where something has said, hey, there's fat in this liver. And then there's also some elevated, what we call transaminases, the liver enzymes, the AST and ALT.
ALT, yeah.
Yeah, and usually ALT is going to be, you know, higher than the AST in this pattern, but that's not perfect. And like you mentioned, you're right on that. Not everyone with fatty liver or even advanced fibrosis, stages of fibrosis, are always going to have elevated liver enzymes because those are increased with active, you know, inflammation and disease. So, so this thing called a FIB-4, you know, takes into account age. It actually adds in platelets. It includes the ALT and AST. Platelets are a blood product for patients that have to do with the liver health. And then we get a score, and we can get a low, intermediate, or high-risk score. And then based upon that, then we can go on and do something called an elastography. It's kind of like ultrasound, but it looks at the liver stiffness. And then based upon that, it can help you understand, well, are you at real high risk for true fibrosis and cirrhosis? And do you need to see a real liver specialist to get liver-directed therapy? Or do we just need to start treating the fatty liver, which we can talk about, which really is, fatty liver disease to me is really the quintessential adiposity-based or complication of obesity, because it is absolutely first line to treat with lifestyle. So diet, exercise, specifically focusing, in my opinion, this is where my role came in, treating the obesity. The underlying driving force of the disease process is treating the obesity. And so lifestyle is absolutely foundational. Like every disease we talk about that has anything to do with lifestyle, it's always first line. And it is absolutely no exception in this case. So that's basically how we would go for a patient.
I mean, I guess the question is, you know, for people listening though, and for primary care doctors listening, I know we have cardiologists, I know we have other endocrinologists that listen that probably aren't doing this. Should you be basically screening every person with obesity coming in, at least from a baseline? Then if they have high risk characteristics such as type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, doing the FIB-4, and going down this pathway.
Yeah. I mean, especially primary care doctors, endocrinologists, obesity specialists, possibly, you know, cardiologists who, if they happen to be the ones seeing patients who have cardiometabolic disease, who already have heart disease. Like I said, part of it is reducing the cardiovascular risk. So when people look at these guidelines we publish, not only do we talk about how to screen and diagnose using these groups of high risk patients and the FIB-4 and the elastography and who to send to liver specialists, but also the treatment options and then the cardiovascular risk reduction too, including diet, exercise, medications, etc.
Okay, so to prevent this, we need to work as hard as we can not to gain weight. That's kind of obvious. It goes into every other podcast we do. If you have gained weight and you have some of these high risk characteristics, get screened. You know, we want everybody to try to lose weight if they have excess weight. But again, this goes into our whole, you know, if you're more in that metabolically unhealthy spectrum, mm-hmm. including with potential fatty liver and other cardiometabolic markers, being, you know, maybe being a little bit more aggressive, like for someone that, you know, surgery is not for me, but if you have more of these characteristics, maybe think a little bit stronger about surgery if medicines didn't work necessarily.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good, now what about in terms of dietary patterns? We talked about this for, you know, the whole, you know, if you're genetically predisposed to increasing liver fat just with weight gain, regardless. What about just dietary pattern without weight loss? Does that have an effect on
a little bit
fatty
so
liver?
The problem is we don't know that it. That it.
Holy cow!
Did you hear that?
Holy cow!
What's
holy
your,
cow!
Scheduling that you
oh,
use?
Oh god!
it's my meeting.
Use,
I told you
like,
about. I had to do that.
Or
take that.
I'm gonna have to edit. I will have to edit this.
Easy
part.
Call is
this is at
very,
the 16 minute.
Very,
this is 16 minutes.
Difficult.
Holy cow! We just all right. Our rankings just dropped.
Told you. All right. So back on track. Okay. So creating an energy deficit is the primary goal for a dietary intervention. So energy deficit, whether we use medications and surgeries or not, that is the primary goal. That's where we know we have benefits, not just for the fatty liver, but also the fibrosis. I can see you about to laugh. So, but beyond just the energy deficit, there does seem to be benefit, especially with fatty liver markers, of having a little bit more of a Mediterranean pattern. So not getting fat from saturated fat, like from animal fats and butters and coconut oils and these things, and getting fat from nuts and seeds, monounsaturated fats like olive oil, etc. Otherwise, probably a lower fat and maybe a little bit lower carb, especially lower sugar diet component, higher fiber. So more vegetables, beans, legumes, high fiber fruit. But really, we don't have the best data to say that is going to suddenly fix advanced fibrosis and cirrhosis, but energy deficit creating weight loss does. So, you know, really our goal for these people, especially if you have a higher risk, is really more than 10% weight loss. Obviously targeting the fat. More muscle's good. So working out's really important. Aerobic exercise resistance training is good for liver fat. But the weight loss is a key that we know helps for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, this is where you start getting into these internet battles. I just posted a thing about how, you know, there's some doctor last year, I think it was a dentist, actually. I'm pretty sure it was a dentist, who said that treat fruit like poison or dessert or whatever, because more than three pieces of fruit or something per day it's going to increase your risk of fatty liver. And it's like, that's interesting, because fruit, very low energy density, meaning filling, few calories per unit of volume. So, you know, you can eat a big whole thing of watermelon and it's not that many calories, relatively, or big carton of strawberries. You can actually have a carton of strawberries. It's like 150 calories.
Yeah.
So, and that would be considered like a couple, at least just a couple servings. But if that helps you eat fewer calories, you lose weight. I don't care that it has fructose in there. Fructose, people, there's other podcasts, people are like, oh, stay away from fructose because it has it's metabolized differently in the body and it has an increased risk of de novo lipogenesis due to the way it's metabolized, blah, 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 increased liver fat. But it's all hypothetical. And in humans, you know, obviously fruit is actually not all fructose anyway. So it's a mixture of glucose and fructose.
Which most things are anyways, when we talk about this.
Yeah, even high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, it's very similar. Nobody's drinking fructose. But that said,
pure fructose.
We don't want to drink sugary beverages because the whole thing just overwhelms all of our systems to deal with.
Yeah,
so
even if you believe the whole this whole idea of this hypothetical risk from it, We want to eat low energy density foods regardless. But right. I would say do not be afraid of fruit. It comes down to the energy balance. If ketogenic diets, people think ketogenic diets are more beneficial for non-alcoholic fatty liver. That remains to be seen. Mostly comes down to energy balance regardless. But if that helps you lose weight, if that's the thing that helps you lose weight and keep it off because it keeps you satiated, more satiety during the day, lower energy balance, keeps you at a lower weight, fine, whatever. I don't really care. I just don't want people to feel like they can't eat fruit.
Right.
Overall dietary pattern probably matters, but the thing that matters most is the weight loss for this specific thing because it's the actual pathophysiology of what's going on with fat in your liver. Now, if you cannot do the diet and exercise stuff, because it's hard to lose weight as we've gone over the biology and the pathogenesis or pathophysiology of obesity and why it's hard to lose weight, keep it off. What about drugs? What kind of drugs we got? What kind of stuff can we shill out right now?
So what we'll end up recommending in this guideline is that, you know, if you have obesity complicated by fatty liver, certainly, that is an advanced stage of obesity and a higher indication for some sort of obesity, anti-obesity medication to help people lose weight and meet that target, really, you know, at least 5, but really more than 5 to 10 and ultimately really more than 10% weight loss to get those benefits. So all of them would be fine. And we can and those should be personalized anyways in a whole variety of different reasons we can talk about in a different podcast. But if we start getting to the point where there is more of a risk of advanced fibrosis, and we think there really is NASH, that's steatohepatitis, or a real risk of, say, cirrhosis, then it would be nice to use some of the medications that are thought to and being studied for reducing the risk of NASH. And that gets into the GLP-1 receptor agonists, most specifically in this case, semaglutide. Trade name, hopefully we don't get in trouble, Wegovy, and a higher dose Ozempic are being studied so far with some good benefits. But I'll tell you, most of what we see so far really still comes down to the weight loss benefits. And so as we'll discuss in our other podcast,
it's hard to know if there's truly.
It's going to be hard. I mean, they try to tease these things out in the studies. Yeah. Last year, there was a big trial. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine using high-dose semaglutide for patients with fatty liver. They had really, really, really good weight loss. So, and they're starting to see improvements in all these markers. But it's pretty hard to tease that out. But there are reasons that GLP-1 receptor agonist therapy may work well because of the different mechanisms it has beyond just the weight loss. But that would be probably the preferred medication for weight loss for right now. There are some in the pipeline that maybe we'll talk about in a different different episode. Maybe by the time this gets published, tirzepatide will be approved for type 2 diabetes. But I'm not sure exactly on that timeline.
We're going to do our whole podcast all about medications and weight loss very soon. It's going to be a whole series of it. The reason we're probably saving it is also because of this tirzepatide drug, we'll discuss here in that podcast a little bit more. But okay, yeah, so what about
surgery?
Any other drugs?
Well,
surgery, of course.
Yeah. Well, so all the other medications should be considered also, you know, again, depending on personal basis. Now, if you have type 2 diabetes and advanced fibrosis or NASH, then one of the medications that we do know has benefits is called pioglitazone. So your physician may talk to you about that if there's no reason not to use it. It kind of got a bad rap several years ago because its sister medication seemed to increase some cardiovascular risks. Pioglitazone is not helpful if you have heart failure because it tends to retain water. But otherwise, from a cardiometabolic standpoint, the way it works on lipid, your fat metabolism, it's pretty darn helpful for sugars, cardiovascular benefits, and it's good for liver benefits in the case of NASH.
We discussed it in our medications and weight gain because you may gain weight with it, but it's helpful for creating new adipocytes in a healthful manner, as opposed to creating new triglycerides into your other places that aren't supposed to be there, like your liver.
Yeah.
So that's that's it's if you want to learn more, you can listen to our other podcast. And, what about vitamin E, fish oils? I know these things are being discussed
fish oil,
all the time.
Maybe doesn't help. Vitamin E actually does have benefits in some of the studies, but definitely don't do that on your own. That might end up being the liver doctors advising that. If you have type 2 diabetes, other medications that probably have some benefit include the SGLT2 inhibitors. So empagliflozin, dapagliflozin, Jardiance, Farxiga. There are some studies in people with NASH, NAFLD, where it certainly seems to help some of the stuff, but we don't have that histology benefit yet that we know about where we see benefits on biopsy. But certainly if I have a patient with type 2 diabetes, obesity, type 2 diabetes, high risk of fatty liver being NASH, they're going to get GLP therapy and SGLT2 inhibitor therapy in addition to intensive diet and exercise efforts, unless there's some reason not to, for sure.
Surgery.
So surgery, absolutely. You know, bariatrics or metabolic surgery is still underutilized. And that's another thing. We got to have a whole podcast on that, I'm sure.
We're bringing Garth on. Bringing our boy. He's a vegan. We're not going to hold. We're actually probably going to rough him up a little bit. But,
we'll have to wait till we all are together.
He's a good surgeon. We just we don't agree on some of the nutrition stuff, but that's okay.
So bariatric metabolic surgery absolutely indicated for people with obesity complicated by fatty liver, especially if there's NASH. And we should be considering these interventions earlier on, depending on how people respond to diet, exercise, medications. Just like type 2 diabetes, we do need to consider it early on. Obviously, coverage is an issue. So, you know, people with lower BMIs should be eligible for medication and surgery. That isn't always the case. There's been calls for it, but there's obviously that issue there too.
Cool. All right. So let's wrap this up and make it practical. You have obesity, overweight, and you want to be you're kind of like, well, God, I didn't know that fatty liver was a thing, or that I'm kind of worried about it. You have more of these characteristics, metabolic syndrome. That means your HDL is a little bit lower, triglycerides a little bit higher, fasting blood sugar is a little bit higher. Your waist circumference is a little bit, you can listen to our diagnosis of obesity podcast, but your waist circumference is enlarged. You have type 2 diabetes and you're like, okay, and I was worried about my sugars, but now I'm worried about fatty liver because I'm listening to these two meatheads talk about this, what to do. You ask your doctor for a screen, say maybe a FIB4.
Yeah. And for the doctors out there, this is what you need to be. And you can just go to MD Calc or Google it. But it's going to include the ALT, AST, platelet count, age, BMI, et cetera. And then that'll help give a sort of a risk of, you know, do you have a risk of NASH? Not just fatty liver, but actual fibrosis, possibly could, if you have that high risk, get something called an elastography, liver stiffness measurement. If that's really high, you could end up seeing a liver specialist in addition to an endocrinologist or obesity specialist. Most importantly, we want to treat the obesity, the underlying driving force of this, with dietary efforts, an energy deficit as the primary goal, an otherwise Mediterranean pattern as sort of the secondary goal. We do want to increase aerobic and resistance training to improve our cardiometabolic health for sure for the liver health. We want to treat high blood pressure and lipids just like we would for cardiovascular risk. Possibly use medications to support our weight loss efforts. If you have type 2 diabetes, maybe some medications that help not only with sugars, but also with the liver fat. Might talk to you about some of these specific weight loss medications like Ozempic and Wegovy for liver disease. If you have more advanced risk, bariatric metabolic surgery. I think that's probably a good conclusion for especially people listening to this.
I don't want people to worry and be like, oh, God, I'm...
No, just know complications.
I don't want people to worry.
Yeah. We want to understand the risks of obesity. Obesity is complex. This is a quintessential adiposity-based disease. It is something that we need to be aware of. and we want to prevent it and treat it if necessary. We want to be aware of it. And so, you know, for the physicians and the clinicians out there, the ACE, co-sponsored by AASLD, guidelines, should be published about the time this podcast is even available. And so, check it out. Let us know some feedback. Don't be too hard on me. But Ken Kuzi, by the way, he's an endocrinologist liver specialist who has done just like an extreme amount of the research on this. He was our lead. He's basically a liver specialist, but he's an endocrinologist. And then we got some other specific liver specialists to also help him take the lead. And, you know, he's an amazing guy, by the way. So if you ever, for physicians, if you ever want to listen to a very clinical podcast, look for some by him. He actually did one recently. I think maybe on the ACE podcast or something, but that's my plug for him.